here. Thank you for having me. I love Philadelphia, and I get excited talking about this topic for several reasons. One is because this is about getting results in any area of your life. So much more than just about crucial conversations. You see, it's a tool for talking when the stakes are high. It's really about getting results in any area of your life. And so to teach something that can not only help you in the workplace, but that can also help you with your spouse, can help you with your kids, with your aging parents, that's something pretty powerful. I also get excited to talk about this topic because it's research-based. It's not just something we thought up and said, let's try this. It's grounded in 25 years of research that continues on. Vital Smarts is a research company, and they continue to do a lot of really interesting research. The results of the research from this crucial conversation was basically looking at leaders in companies, and not necessarily people with authority, but people who are able to get through the red tape. They could be a frontline worker, but they were able to get things done. And they had strong relationships and lots of respect. And the authors wanted to find out what sets them apart. They basically spent 10,000 hours watching these people trying to find out, is it in their DNA? Is it some skill that we can learn? And the results of that study are in Crucial Conversations and Crucial Confrontations, the blue book that's the companion book. There's also a new book called Influencer, The Power to Change Leaders. So that's the latest. But I want to just dive in. We've got a little bit over an hour, and this is usually a 16-hour training. So we're going to dive in. I'm not going to try to squeeze 16 hours into one, but I'm going to give you a couple little gems so you can take away and just get a taste of what this training is. So just here, principles and skills for engaging in dialogue about high-stakes disagreements. Those are what the two books look like. I want to start by showing you a crucial conversation. What does it look like? What does it sound like? And we have our speakers up on high, so I hope you can all hear this on the sides. If not, I can kind of turn the speakers a little bit your way. But this is Rick and Brittany. And have you ever been in the workplace and you feel like your plate is full, and then all of a sudden the boss comes in and gives you even more to put on your plate? Has that ever happened to anyone in here? So what do you do in that situation, particularly when they don't do it in the most tactful way? So I want you to put yourself in Brittany's shoes, and I want you to think, if you were Brittany, what would you say next? What would be your next sentence? Let's listen in.
Well, your team has had over a week to come up with a plan. How long will it take to bring the project in?
It'll take us just over 6 months. 6 months and a week, to be precise. Is that what you were thinking?
Well, I know this is a stretch, but I was thinking by the end of the quarter.
Well, it's a good thing we're talking about it now before any commitments have been made, because there's no way to finish that soon. It's always taken us almost twice that long.
That's why I put you on this job in the first place. You always find a way to do the impossible.
Thanks for the confidence, but I don't think we can get it done. This is really impossible.
Maybe I haven't made myself clear about how important this is. We're not here to talk about what's possible. Your job is to get it done by the end of the quarter. Product launches are at stake here. Surely you know that. And besides, the accelerated schedule is already in the master plan. Everyone is counting on us.
So we've already made a commitment? You agreed to a deadline with the execs before you talked to me about feasibility?
Our leaders need for this to happen for us to hit plan. Hey, have you forgotten how hard I worked to get you promoted to this job? And what I said about you? I said you were a team player. Was I mistaken?
So you're in Brittany's shoes. I want you to think, what would you say next? What would be your next sentence? And that's just for you to think about and ponder. This is what we would consider a crucial conversation. What makes it crucial? Why is this crucial? It's career breaking. Okay, so it's high stakes. There's high stakes. That's one of the elements of a crucial conversation. What else makes it crucial?
Because there's so much going on. It's not just the project. It's all the other stuff around it.
Okay, and the other stuff is often highly emotional.
Yes.
So there are strong emotions. Anything else that makes it crucial?
It's personal.
It's personal. That's also emotional. The third element is the one that's most obvious. Yes, there's opposing opinions. And those are the three elements of a crucial conversation. Opposing opinions, strong emotions, and high stakes. When you have those three elements, you got yourself a crucial conversation. So here are some examples of some crucial conversations. If you want to disagree with the boss and they're convinced they're right, if you have emotionally volatile disagreements, if you're asking people to do more with less and they don't know how they're going to be able to do more with less, giving feedback, always a tough one. Often a crucial conversation if someone disagrees about your feedback or you disagree with someone else's feedback. Relationship concerns with the spouse, I keep wanting to throw some of the personal examples in there to see how this can apply to not just the workplace. Or coaching a defensive leader, just a tip of the iceberg of typical crucial conversations. Talking to your teenagers about bedtime or drugs or going out and curfew, lots of different things with our families. Lots of crucial conversations when those three elements are present. Now, here on the left-hand side are areas where we might be stuck, where we might not be getting what we want. And what we're suggesting is that anytime you're stuck, there's a crucial conversation that you're either not holding or not holding well. And let me just highlight that with this chart. Let's say this is a crucial conversation. And let's say over here is stuck. And by stuck, I mean any time where you're not getting what you want. And that could be low morale on your team, not hitting deadlines, not having the budget to complete your projects. So anytime you're stuck, what we're suggesting is that there is a crucial conversation that you need to have in order to get unstuck and get the results that you want. But what often happens is we recognize that there's this conversation to be had, and we say, oh, well, maybe I'll have it next week, or maybe someone else will say something, or, well, I really don't want to, no, nothing's going to happen anyway, and we stay stuck, and we wonder why we're still stuck. And what some of us do is we don't even recognize that there's a crucial conversation that we even need to have. And so what we like to say is that crucial conversations are at the crossroads of results. And so that's what this is saying on the right-hand side. Anytime you're stuck, there's a crucial conversation you're either not having or not having well. Now, I see some people taking notes. We have a seat drop card that was on your seats when you came in, and there is some space on the back to take notes if you like. And if you open it up, it gives you an overview of the skills and all the different modules. And I'm going to talk about this a little bit more as we move forward. But right now, I am in the first principle, get unstuck. And that's where we help define what is a crucial conversation and how do you define the conversation that's keeping you from getting what you want. I'll refer to this in a little bit, but just so you know where it is, what it is, and there's some spots on the back to take some notes. So what I'd like for you to do is I'd like for you to think, I want you to bring this home, because it's easy to kind of sit here for an hour and say, like, yeah, this stuff is interesting, but I want you to see how you can apply it in your own life. So what I'd like for you to do is just really quick with the person next to you, where are you challenged? Where are you not getting what you want? And it could be anything related to productivity, morale, safety, if that's a concern at your workplace. Where are you not getting what you want? Where are you stuck? So with the partner, real quick, 30 seconds each, where are you stuck?
Okay.
Now, there's typically two ways you respond in a crucial conversation, and I want to show you a couple ways that we do. Watch this video. Again, Brittany is the one on the right, and think about if you could have named this strategy, what would you call it?
Our strategy.
Yes.
Our leaders need this to happen for us to interact. Hey, have you forgotten how hard I worked to get you promoted to this job and what I said about you? I said you were a team player. Was I mistaken?
Well, no, I want to be a team player, but...
But what?
I have a staff that's already spread too thin, and I don't think there are enough hours in the day.
Are you telling me you're not committed to the company's success?
Oh, my gosh.
I guess we'll do whatever it takes.
No, we'll do it. Oh, yeah, one more thing. I'm pulling Williams from your team to work it out.
Strategy, what would you call it?
Okay.
This is what women call silence. Though we have considered that there's a continuum of communication, and on one end is what you call silence, and that's where you're not speaking up and saying what you really feel. On the other end, we call it violence. I don't particularly like that word. It's not like you're getting punched or you're punching somebody, but it's more verbally aggressive. So this is an example of what we would call silence. Now, what's the big deal? What's the cost here? What's the cost of her strategy?
Her job.
Failure of the project?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know the cost?
Failure of the associated products that are riding on this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So another cost?
Destroyed relationship with her team.
Yes, and her boss as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's her health, her personal, the stress.
Great. I mean, not great, but good point. Yes. And she brings the stress back to her family, and when she comes home at 10 o'clock at night and she's upset. Lots of cost here. I think it's what we often do is we think about what's the cost if I speak up. Oh my gosh, I might get yelled at, or I might get fired, or the boss might think I'm a complainer or a whiner. And we go through this mental calculus, and what we found that the best, the most effective in the workplace, reverse that math and thought about what's the cost if I don't speak up. Let me give you an example of some costs, because again, I think this is something that all of us do at some point in our lives, and we don't think about the cost of not speaking up. This is a true story, a couple of more extreme examples, but we do a lot of work in healthcare, and we were called into a hospital in the Southwest because they were having all sorts of problems. They had very high turnover rates among their nurses. They had very high infection rates at their hospital. And it came to a head when a woman had been called in for a surgery. She had a flawless foot amputation. And when she was coming, going back to her room, her anesthesia was wearing off. She was coming to, and she looked down at her foot, and she started to scream. The nurse came in, and she couldn't calm her down. She couldn't figure out what was wrong. So she got the doctor. Doctor came in. He couldn't figure out what was wrong. He tried to calm her down. He goes to look at her chart. And true story, he looked, and she'd been checked in for a tonsillectomy, and they incorrectly amputated her foot. And you think, what would it have taken for one person to just say, hey, wrong surgery? And what we found when we went in was that seven people saw something wrong and said nothing. You think, why would well-intentioned, well-educated people not say anything? And what we found was that the nurse's assistant said, I wonder why I'm putting out these kind of knives for this kind of surgery. Well, what do I know? I'm just a nurse's assistant. The anesthesiologist wondering, why am I administering these kinds of drugs for this kind of surgery? Well, the surgeon's a jerk, and he yelled at me last time. I don't want to yell that again. And I don't want to hold up our 10 other surgeries we have to do today. And they did this mental calculus. What is the cost if I speak up, rather than what is the cost if I don't speak up? And major costs. From that, we've done a study called Silence Kills, because in many industries, if you don't speak up, there are dramatic consequences. We've also done another follow-up study called Silence Fails, because in the workplace, with projects, when we don't speak up, we miss our deadlines. We don't speak up, and we go over budget. We don't speak up, and our morale and our team goes to the floor. It also affects your health. The New York Times came out with a study about a year ago. It was in their health section. And what they were looking at was married couples and how they dialogue, particularly when they're in arguments. Looking particularly at the women, and did they really speak up and say what they thought and felt during arguments with their husband? And what they found was that women who did not say what they thought and felt during arguments with their husbands were 4 times more likely to die during the course of this 15-year study. Now, my last speech I gave, this guy raised his hand and said, my wife's going to live forever! Always sharing how she felt and thought all the time. So, the point is, it affects your health if you hold it in. So, silence, the cost of silence. But yeah, there's another way. Oh, actually, here, let me show you this quick little comic strip. It's from Dilbert. This first guy comes in and says to Dilbert, how's your project coming along? Dilbert says, it's a steaming pile of failure! Like 15 drunken monkeys with a jigsaw puzzle. Boss comes in. How's your project coming along?
Fine.
So you often see that in the workplace. All right, I am going to skip a video here just for time's sake and go right to what is another strategy that we have? So let's take another look at Brittany, and if you could put a name to this strategy, what would you call it?
Our leaders need this to happen for us to hit plan. Hey, have you forgotten how hard I worked to get you promoted to this job and what I said about you? I said you were a team player. Was I mistaken?
Well, no, I want to be a team player, but...
But what?
You know what? I don't like the way you're saying that I have to agree with management's commitment in order to be a team player.
What do you mean?
Well, you agree to a deadline that you know I can't agree to, and behind my back, no less, and then you say I'm not a team player if I don't give in. That's really unfair, and it feels like blackmail to boot.
So, you're saying we can't count on you?
No, you can count on me, but not to give in to ridiculous demands and management pressure, so we make promises we can't keep. Maybe the other people who work for you will pretend to accept an impossible goal and then go out and do something less, but that's not how I work. Is that clear?
Yeah. I think I know where you stand.
Blunt, argumentative, touche. This is what we would call violence. So as you see, it's not physically violent, it's just more aggressive. It's on the other end of the continuum. So this is what we refer to as violence. What's the cost here? Job, perhaps? Project again?
The reputation,
the relationship, your credibility? Now, Sophie, did anyone think that this was good? This was a good example? She did a better job? Heard some people say it was better.
A little better, same result, but...
Well, I'm looking at his response. I'm not saying it's better.
Okay. Sometimes I get some pushback and people say, well, she might be getting some street cred. You know, now he's not going to know not to push her around anymore. She's getting a little respect for you.
She stood up and left.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let me give you an example, an extreme example of how even sort of this behavior can... There's a cost to it. And... basically, one of the authors was going to a lumber factory. We do work in a lot of different arenas. And he got there. This guy was being wheeled out on a stretcher. And he had blood all over his face. And he wondered what was going on. So when he went in, he said, what happened to that guy? And they said, oh, that was Bob. He was just mouthing off to his supervisor. And that's how they dealt with problems at this lumber factory. All the supervisors were 6'2" or over. And if you got out of line, this was many years ago. But that's how they kept in mind. So the author thought, whoa, I got a lot of work to do here. So when he talked to Bob's team at lunch, he said, what do you think about your supervisor? And they said, well, you should have seen our last supervisor. He said, what happened to your last supervisor? And they said, well, we fed him to the hog. He says, I don't follow you. He said, we fed him to the hog. He said, I still don't follow what you mean. And they said, we fed him to the hog, and we're going to fire it up today. Why don't you come watch? Said, okay, kind of reluctantly. He followed them out of the cafeteria, around the back, this grassy knoll, over this little hill, and there was a little freestanding building with this rusty garage door. They pulled it open, and inside was this huge machine with this opening in the middle with these blades that went all around the opening. And this machine was called the hog. And they turned the hog on, these blades go whirling around at light speed, threatening to turn anything into waste, just like that. And the author said, whoa, what am I going to witness here? What is about to go on? What are you guys doing? They said, relax, just watch. We've done this before. So remember, it is a lumber factory. So over in the corner, there was a huge stack of finished wood ready to go out the door. And what these men on Bob's team did is they went and they grabbed this finished product and they started to chuck it into the hog, turning it into waste just like that. The author watches for a moment and he says, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you turning products to go out the door into waste? They said, oh, well, our supervisors are rated on final product versus waste each month. Too much waste, no more supervisor. And so that's how they got rid of supervisors they didn't like, is they ran up the waste numbers until the supervisor got the boot. And what we take from that is that any time you confront a problem badly, somewhere a hog is fed. So some people say, yeah, I like this. What's wrong with it? It's not so bad. She told him how she felt. But I would argue that if on Friday at 5 o'clock she really needs her boss's help on something, he's probably going to leave. maybe 2 weeks from now, when she really needs support of him on a project, he might say, you know, I think that's a really stupid idea, and not give her the support she needs. Or maybe try to sabotage a project. But whenever you treat a problem badly, confront a problem badly, somewhere a hog is fed. And even though in the moment it might feel great, you might say, yeah, show them, it's going to come back. And you might not see it, but it'll come back in some way. Make sense?
Yeah,
okay. All right, so we got silence and violence. All right. So as we move forward here, I want to give you an example of what this violent conversation might sound like. So we have a conversation here. It says, shut up. No, you little limb. You get out of that room or I'm going to tell. Fruitcake, where do you think you might overhear this conversation? At home? Well, this actually happened in a different kind of house. This was an actual conversation of the meeting of the U.S. House of Representatives Ways and Means Committee. So I include that just to show you that our highest leaders sometimes resort to this kind of behavior. And so what do we do in the face of that? What do we do? What kind of tools and skills do we use? This is just a silly cartoon. He says, this guy in the front is talking on his phone. He says, I'm getting the fire-breathing dragon with wings. He wanted $200, but I talked him down to 50. And the tattoo says, kick me. And he comes back, so I'll haunt you later. All right, so this is Brittany doing a better job. Now, none of the videos are perfect, but I wanted to show you one where you see her doing a better job. And just notice, what does she do differently that makes her more effective, more influential in this conversation? Let's take a look.
Our leaders need this to happen for us to hit plan. Hey, have you forgotten how hard I worked to get you promoted to this job and what I said about you? I said you were a team player. Was I mistaken?
I can see we're in a tough spot here. There's a lot at stake, and we've already promised the management team that we'd hit the target. Is that about right?
Well, yes, that's exactly right.
I don't want to disappoint our customers or senior management any more than you do. But at the same time, I want to set some realistic goals. Otherwise, we're just setting ourselves up for failure. Equally important, I want a relationship where you're upfront with me, rather than making the commitments first and then talking to the content expert afterwards.
Hey, don't bail out on me now. I've already made the commitment.
You know what? That's a big part of the problem. You asked me to take part in the planning, but then when I disagree, you say it's a done deal because management is saying we have to do it. And to make matters worse, when I suggest a more realistic objective, you hint that if I don't do what you want, I'm not a team player. That doesn't feel right. To be honest, it feels manipulative. Did it happen that way, or did I miss something?
Well, I didn't have enough time, and I knew if I talked to you about it ahead of time, you'd say it was impossible, but this project's extremely important.
All right, let's tackle these things one at a time. First, I'd like to find a way for us to work together honestly and in a timely manner. I'd like for both of us to feel comfortable about how we establish plans.
Well, I'm not sure what to say.
Well, I'm curious. Why did you feel as if you had to involve me in setting the deadline when the deadline was already set? And then when I gave you my best estimate, you more or less threatened my job. Am I doing something that makes it hard for you to sit down and talk to me openly and honestly?
Well, I was under a tremendous amount of pressure to make the commitment, and I knew you'd say no, but you always find a way. I knew I was drawing down on our relationship, but I didn't think it would cause it.
All right, compared to the other videos, is her level of influence higher or lower?
Way higher.
Yeah. What did she do differently? Let me see some hands so that we can. Yeah, so in the back, what did she do better here?
Well, she acknowledged and then clarified the issue.
Okay.
And then she expressed her feelings and provided some solutions.
All right. What else did she do? The pink.
She empathized with his goal and what he needed to accomplish and allied himself with what he needed to do.
Yeah, she said, I don't want to disappoint our clients any more than you do. Yeah.
She also accepted, asked him if she played a part in why he couldn't talk to her, to take ownership of possible
communication. Yes, there's a question there for an actual dialogue. We define dialogue as the free flow of meaning. So it's not a lecture or a monologue or a one-way. It's so you have those questions to have it go both ways. Great, I saw it over here.
She maintained both his and her self-esteem.
Oh, okay. How did she do that? What do you mean?
Well, talking civilly and not blaming and drawing out the parameters of the relationship.
Okay, that's the skill we call making it safe. How do you make it safe to talk about tough things so the other person doesn't feel like they're being hammered and that you feel comfortable as well? So how can you make it safe to talk about really tough things? Yes.
At several points, she checked for understanding to make sure that she was doing a little bit of paraphrasing, maybe some other things. Checked to make sure that she was understanding the situation.
Great.
She commented that her, where the goals that she talked about his goals, she said that those were her goals as well, that their goals overlap.
Yes, because oftentimes we think we're like this, but really we're aligned, but we're just talking past each other. Good. Well, I want to get to some skills here that we can learn and use. This is an overview of the different modules that we do in the entire training. This also matches what you have inside of your threefold here in the middle. And Get Unstuck is where we're starting. And that's, again, how do you spot the conversation that's keeping you from getting what you want? Start With Heart is basically, how do you stay focused on what you really want? Because oftentimes we get sidetracked, and our goal becomes to punish or blame or be right, rather than strengthen the relationship and get better results. Learn to Look, that's a module where we look at what is our own style under stress. Do we tend to go to silence or violence? How can we notice when the conversation is becoming crucial? And how can we notice signs of silence or violence in others? Make It Safe, what we were just talking about a minute ago. How do you talk about really tough stuff? If someone in your office has body odor, how do you bring that up? Now, how do you talk about the undiscussables? And so it's tools for all sorts of conversations, but how do you make both people feel comfortable? Master My Stories, what do you do when you're angry, hurt, and scared, and upset, and anxious? How do you keep your emotions in check when you're in the middle of a crucial conversation? State My Path, which I'm going to focus on today, it's what do you say first? What do you say second? What do you say third? How do you actually start the conversation? So I'm going to give you those tools in just a moment. Explore Others' Paths is what do you do when you do everything right, but the other person doesn't want to talk, or the other person just wants to scream and holler and they don't want to listen? What do you do then? And finally, Move to Action. A lot of trainings have great 2 days of content, but then it's a thing of the past. 2 weeks later, and you don't remember what you learned. And so we have a whole module about how to make it stick. How do you actually overcome barriers to change, and how do you implement this into your daily life? So that's an overview, and I'm going to do a little bit in Start With Heart and a little bit in State My Path. So, as it says here, the problem that we face is just because we're talking doesn't mean we're talking about the right thing and solving the problem. What we want to do is backtrack from where you're stuck to the crucial conversation that you need to have in order to get the results that you want. Now, this is a home example, a married couple. We have Jason and Susie here, and they're going to be arguing about how she drives. And I want you to think, is the conversation, is what they need to talk about, is it really about her driving? Or is there something else going on here? So I want you to take a look at this and think about what's the right conversation that they need to be having.
Can we talk about what just happened?
No, I don't have 6 hours to spare.
Is that supposed to be some kind of a cheap shot?
Duh. You're not happy unless you analyze everything to death. Can't you just let go of whatever it is that's bothering you?
You never give me a chance to talk about anything. As far as you're concerned, 2 beers and a roll in the hay and all our problems are over.
Works for me.
Well, it doesn't work for me. I want to talk about the way you treat me when I drive.
Jesus, just go to our separate corners, all right?
I pick you up, we pull out, and immediately you start in on me. Shift down, turn so fast on the right. You're driving on the gravel. You drive me nuts. And what's worse yet, it's insulting. You treat me like a child.
Well, excuse me if I care about the car.
More than you care about me.
At least the car treats me well.
Oh, and you treat me so well. You and your cheap shots and endless sarcasm.
My only weapon against your incessant whining.
It isn't whining. It's called conversation. But you wouldn't know about that because I don't have that on that SPN.
It's ESPN, you twit.
Oh, isn't that perfect? Our marriage is falling apart, and you're correcting my spelling?
Our marriage isn't falling apart. It fell apart 6 months ago when you started your endless campaign on how I need to stop spending so much money. Oh, I'm sorry, dear. Did I buy the large Slurpee for lunch? What was I thinking? It's like being married to an accountant.
That is the meanest thing anyone's ever said to me. You take that back right now.
CPA!
Come on, take that
CPA.
Back right now.
Guys, what do you think is in store for the future?
Okay, so is
the real conversation about how she drives? Is that what they need to be talking about?
No.
What do they need to be talking about?
Control.
Woo! Ding, ding, right here. Respect. Very nice. Lots of people say finances. answer there, he's still going to have problems. Because when it comes to raising their kids, they're still going to argue. When it comes to which TV show to watch that night, they're still going to have problems because they're not addressing respect. So how can we make sure we're really getting that right conversation? And we so often miss it and pick the sort of low-hanging fruit or the one that's easier rather than the real one that we need to take on. Very nice. So if you find yourself, constantly discussing the same issue over and over, and that would be, you'd know that if you come home and your spouse says, oh, how's it going with Bob today? Like, what's the latest? You know, they know the characters in your life that you complain about all the time. This might be an area to look at that maybe you're addressing the wrong conversation with them. If you're getting increasingly upset or your solution doesn't get you what you really want, this might be an area to look. Let me give you a tool to use. It's something called CPR. I want to break this down. This tool is a way to attack a problem in your brain before you have it. It's a way to unpack it to figure out what should you be addressing. So the C stands for content. That's the here and the now. Hey, Allison, if Allison came in late, I'd say, hey, Allison, I noticed you came in late today. You're addressing what just happened. It's a one-time occurrence. But sometimes that doesn't get it because there's a pattern of behavior. And so if Allison is late all the time and I just say, hey, no, she's late today, it doesn't really get at the heart of the problem. The heart of the problem is that there's a pattern of behavior that we need to address. And sometimes that's not enough because we need to address the relationship. And so it's not that someone's late once. It's not that they have a pattern of being late, but it's that they always say they're going to be on time and they still are late, and now you're losing trust in what they say. And that affects how you work together. It affects your relationship. And the conversation around relationship is not a touchy-feely relationship. I'm not talking about, like, we're BFF. You know, that's not the conversation, best friends forever, for those. It's usually a conversation around trust, respect, or competency. Does anyone here do their own yard work? What's your name, sir?
Walt.
Walt. Okay, Walt. Do you have dandelions ever in your yard?
Hardly ever.
Hardly ever. Let's say... Okay. Well, let's just say, God forbid, one day there was a dandelion in your yard, and as you're walking in, you just kind of grab it on your way in the house. What would happen about 2 weeks later? What would happen?
Yeah, I'd see a couple more.
They'd be right back. Why?
Because I didn't pull it from the root.
Very nice. We didn't get to the root, and that's how I want you to think about this. How can you get to the tap root? Because otherwise, we often are swiping at that dandelion rather than what's the real root. So if you think about that dandelion, typically, not always, but typically is up here at the content level. This is kind of the ground level, and down here is often where we really need to have the conversation. Now, you might realize in doing this thought process, you might realize, wow, all I need to address is content. You might realize, I need to go straight to relationship. And you might realize you're going to address all three. Or maybe the crucial conversation you need to have is with yourself. So it's a way to really think about a problem. And I find that most people who come to me and say, I've had this conversation, and it just didn't work, and I tried, and I asked them a little bit more about it. Well, what exactly did you say? What was it about? They usually, it's a content conversation. My boss cut me off in a meeting, and I called her on it, da da da. But it's not that she cut her off in a meeting. It's that there's this behavior of disrespect, and she didn't get to the heart of the conversation. So note that if you feel like you've tried something a lot before, this might be a place to check, to say, am I addressing the right level? I was teaching a class where a woman came up to me at a break. She was so frustrated because her mother-in-law would come over to her house while she was at work. She would just let herself into her house and she'd clean. And she said, it drives me nuts and it's been going on forever and I've tried to talk to her and nothing works. And somebody over here was like, what's the problem? It sounds great. But when I talked to her about how she was addressing it, she was addressing the content level. She'd come home and she'd say, I can't believe you let yourself in today and started cleaning, and then she would address what just happened rather than this trust or respect issue, that I want you to trust that I can clean my own house or feel the respect that this is my private space. And until they had this conversation, I predict that they're going to continue to have problems. So something for you to think about in how you address a problem. Any questions on that? All right, so that is CPR. So I want you, thinking about what you shared with your partner earlier about where you're stuck, how can you backtrack? What is that crucial conversation that's keeping you stuck? So earlier, you might have identified, for example, morale is low in our office. So if morale is low in your office, you might think, well, is there a pattern of behavior of something going on that the boss keeps doing something that's lowering the morale? Is it something that happened once? Is there new leadership all of a sudden? Or is there something down here? Are people on our team feeling disrespected? Are they feeling like there's a lack of trust? So with your partner that you spoke with earlier, you have just a minute each really quick. What's the conversation that you think you need to have, and is it at the tap root? So share that with your partner so you can come up with a crucial conversation topic.
Well, I have no idea what to say about that one. Because there's no crucial conversation.
Okay, so now that you've identified this crucial conversation, I'm going to give you skills for how do you start that conversation. So know that there's a lot more. I'm just giving you a few little gems. So if you're saying, gosh, is that all there is? Know that there's so much more to it. But I wanted to give you some pieces to get started. So this is how do you open your mouth? What do you say first? And this is called state. And I like to say use state to start. And the sort of subtitle of this module is how to speak persuasively, not abrasively. And the problem that we face is during crucial conversations, we often say things in exactly the wrong way and the wrong order. We often start with our feelings or our emotions, and I'm going to show you a different order that might be a little more effective. The solution is learn 5 skills for saying risky things in a way that minimizes defensiveness. So let's see what this is all about. I want you to think of a message that you have been putting off, something that you would like to, a conversation you'd like to have, but for whatever reason you've been putting it off. Maybe you think the person's kind of sensitive and you're afraid they're going to start crying or they're going to start yelling. Maybe you've been putting it off because it's a sensitive topic, like body odor, you know, something like that, where you think, oh, I'm not even going to go there. But it's something you've been putting off, and I just want you to think about it. And I want you, on the back of your 3-fold, just on the back of those notes, if you were to have the conversation right now and there were no consequences, what would you say? How would you say it? How would you start the conversation? I just want you to take a moment and just brainstorm. What would you say right now? And what we will do is we will refine it as we go, so when we leave here, you'll have a script for starting this conversation. All right, so let me bring you guys back together. We're going to watch a crucial conversation that's not very effective, and then we'll watch it another way and see what skills Melinda is going to use. Have any of you had someone on your team that's not pulling their weight? Has that ever been something that you've experienced? So what do you say? How do you bring it up? And so we're going to watch Melinda take an attempt at bringing it up. Just notice here what she does wrong. I'll warn you ahead that she doesn't do the best job.
What's with you anyway?
No.
You know what I mean.
Actually, I don't.
Every time I come down here, you're either on a personal phone call, reading Dilbert, playing a video game, or you're on the internet. And when you're not wasting your time with personal business, you find a way to make yourself look busy, but you don't do much.
Is that what you think of me?
No, that's the good part. I think that when you do get around to working, you only work on projects you like working on. You put on projects you don't like. So here's my world. I need you to do something for me. If you don't like it, you'll find a way not to do it. And then I'm shafted.
That's really what you think of me.
That's not all, but it's a start.
Here's a newsflash. I'm not going to take your verbal abuse or groundless insults any longer. Okay?
Well, at least he knows how I feel.
All right, how'd that go?
So good.
Okay, so let's take a look at another way that Melinda could take a shot at this. And just notice what she does differently. And she's going to be using the state skills, which you're going to be learning in just a moment. So let's see what it looks like.
Could we talk about something that's starting to bother me?
Sure, what's up?
Well, I'm fairly new around here, and I'm beginning to wonder what it takes to get a job done on time. And I wouldn't normally bring this up, but I wonder about your work habits.
Well, never really in a small talk, are you?
Well, I wouldn't say anything, but I'm kind of stressed. I can't get the job done without you helping me. And the last few times I've come down here, you've been working on things other than your job. One time it was the internet, another time a game. And a few times, you would either shut off your screen or put something away in a drawer.
So, what are you saying? I don't work?
Actually, I don't know what to think. But I do know that when you quickly put things away or hide your screen, it makes me think that you think you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I guess it does.
And to make matters worse, last week when I came down to ask you about how my job was going, twice you couldn't find the work order. I'm beginning to think at best you're disorganized. At worst, you have a very hard time working. Now, I don't know if I'm going in the right direction with this, but please help me out. Let me know what's going on.
We're always in a crazy deadline, so we tend to work in fits and starts. Sometimes we're full out. Other times, we just don't.
All right. This, again, compare this to the other video. Where's her, is her level of influence higher or lower here?
Much higher.
Much higher. What'd she do differently?
Gave
him space to explain. Okay, so the dialogue. Yeah. She gave him some space to explain. She made it not just about me smacking you down, but having a conversation. Nice. Yes?
There were specific behavioral examples, and I think she went down the path very well until she made an assumption at the end. I think she should have asked him as opposed to giving her thoughts.
Yes, yes. Not perfect, but yes. Yes. Over here?
Well, she said things like, I noticed that... her choice of words was more constructive. Mm-hmm. So we into what the specific behaviors that she noticed.
Great. And we're going to be talking about those choice of words in just a moment. Yes.
And she has, help me out here. What?
Yeah.
What am I missing? I'm fairly new here. Left a lot of openings and then started getting actual, but maybe just excuses or may actually be information about how things work and the workload's choppy and maybe he gets frustrated.
Great. And you're speaking to something, the humility piece in there, where she said, you know, I'm new around here. I might not be knowing, you know, how this is supposed to work. And how can we be confident and yet also have humility? This training is not about being nice. It's not about sidestepping the issue or putting it under the rug nicely and, you know, patting them on the back. But yes, we at least we said something. It's about being direct, but with respect. And so Melinda was confident, but yet she also had humility. So we want to make sure we can be confident, but also have that humility piece. Let's unpack this and find out what the skills are. Here is the acronym. It's called STATE. And if you open up your threefold, you don't have to frantically write notes. It is in the very middle, in that middle column on skills, the third one from the bottom, you see STATE. And it's, you see it there? It's kind of hidden. So it's written there, so you don't have to rewrite it. But it's 5 different pieces. Share your facts, tell your story, ask for others' paths, talk tentatively, and encourage testing. The first 3 are the what skills, meaning it's what you say, and the last 2 are how you say the first 3. Let's break these down and talk about each one individually. So this first one, share your facts. Why do you think we'd start with the facts? Why should we start with the facts?
Neutral.
They're neutral, okay? They make it safe because facts are facts, okay?
You take the judgment out of it.
The judgment is out of it, great, yes, which also reduces the defensiveness on the other end. The other reason why you want facts. Yep.
Like training outcomes are observable.
Great, yeah. Facts are more persuasive, they're least insulting. When I used to work for the Secretary of Education in Washington, D.C., and we were having a really hard time getting our teacher quality message across to Congress, and particularly on Capitol Hill. And what happens in D.C. a lot of the time is the messenger is kind of shot based on who you represent, because people will see you coming and they'll say, oh, you're from that part of Texas, or you're from this political party, or you're from this political thought process. And so whenever we would come, people wouldn't even have their ears open as soon as we walked in the door. And we realized we needed to lead with the facts from reputable research organizations, but just lead with the facts and let people come to their own conclusions. And so we made a concerted effort that on our website, in our speeches, in our brochures, we would lead with just the facts. And the feedback we got was overwhelming that, wow, this was the first time I was really able to hear your message. I didn't feel like I was being spun. I really got your message, and I did my own research afterwards, and wow, it confirms it, and I'm really inspired by this cause. So how can you just lead with the facts? They say that when you give up the goal of trying to persuade, you become more persuasive. And if you're trying to shove an idea down someone's throat, they tend to resist. But if you can just state facts without the judgment, it can be quite persuasive. We'll talk about this a little bit more because you don't just state the facts. But let's take a look at this video. And I want you to think of how effective is it. This is a giving some feedback to a peer. And think about if you ever had one of these conversations, either you've been on one end or the other. Let's listen in.
I just don't see us doing much more. You know, I've done everything in my power, we're just stuck at 800. But maybe I can be of help here. I've had my ear to the ground, and I have heard some rumblings. You have people problems, serious ones. Really? Mm-hmm. I think my team is as good as anybody else's. No, your people don't have people problems. You have trust problems. That there's just a way about you that just doesn't work all that well. You're kidding. I never had problems before. I mean, none that I knew of. Well, you know, do insensitive, awkward, bathroom people know it? I don't think so. Wait a minute. Gosh. Are you saying that I'm inept when I deal with people? Well, let me be more specific here. Now, I've seen you run some meetings, and you have no control, so your people have no respect for you. And you're also very easy on problems. What does that mean, Seth? Your employees walk all over you. You're running a country club, Scott. You know, in my day, we knew how to get tough. You know what I mean? No. No, I don't. All right, here's the trick. When you need to get tough, get tough. Okay? Of course, don't get tough in your shoes. That's what you said, right? So, you need to be forceful, but not too forceful. Okay, let me see if I understand this. So I'm supposed to do the right stuff, but do the wrong stuff. I could not have stated it more clearly.
Okay, how effective was that feedback? Not very. Why was it not effective?
No facts.
There's no facts. Doesn't this happen all the time in the workplace? We bring someone in and we give them feedback and we say, you know what, you're kind of aggressive and you're hard to get along with people. And what does that mean? You know what? They don't know what we're talking about, so it's hard for them to improve, and it's probably going to make them pretty mad. Because what do you mean I'm aggressive? What do you mean? What do you mean I'm bad with people? What are you talking about? Give me examples. So let's test your ability to start with facts. What I want you to do, it's in your table groups. I want you to think of someone who's disorganized. So just think of either a specific person in your head, or you can make up a person. What would they look like? What would their desk look like? What would their day-to-day operating life look like? I want you to think of just a disorganized person, and I'd like you to come up with four facts that you could deliver to them about their feedback. You're going to make it up, but I want you to come up with some facts, and then what we will do is I will go around, and I will have each table give me one of those facts, like I am that disorganized person. If it is indeed a fact, I will say, thank you, and I will move to the next table. If it's not a fact, I will respond accordingly. So, come up with some facts in your table groups, at least four.
Based on something like disorganized, related to getting the drugs, then you are back up, then you start getting very disrupted ones. Seems to be the theme. Long story, but basically, pastor of this church, and he's going to be back up. Basically, what I did is I forgot that he had sent me a contract which I didn't fill out on time, and I didn't follow up in the meantime. So when I contacted him, not because I'm going there, because we're not doing it there, and I didn't want to cut that cord yet. I forgot about those two things. He was very alarmed to hear about, you know, that I was still in the ballgame. So if I remember those two things, even though I was tactful in my email to him, he wouldn't look out. It's that kind of way you get it. Well, we're coming up with facts that I think she is the disorder. One fact is you forgot the project. You sent your mail, and I forgot the project.
Okay, so let's all come back together. I know that was pretty quick, but you guys are smart group. I'm sure you got it. Let's start with the back. So I'm going to start over here, and I'm going to pretend again I am that disorganized person. I've just been called into your office, and we've already done the niceties. That's all out of the way. Now you're just going to deliver a fact, and if it's, again, a fact, I will just say, oh, yeah, you're right. And if it's not, I will respond how I might just naturally respond. Okay, so give me one piece of feedback.
You've lost important documents.
What? Which ones? What are you talking about?
The ones we needed to finish the project.
Which ones? What?
Ones I handed to you at the last meeting.
You mean on Thursday's meeting?
Yeah,
Thursday. At the very end, those ones you handed to me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, those. Okay, got it. Okay, thank you. We want to be careful about words like always, never, or vague things like you don't ever do this, because they're going to be thinking about that one time that they were on time to a meeting. If you say, you know, you're always late to meetings, they're going to be thinking about 1992, they were 2 minutes early, and that's where their brain's going to go. And so they're going to get defensive, and they're going to say, I'm not always late to those meetings, and they're maybe do the head thing too. So be as specific as possible. Good job, though. Okay, give me another piece of feedback. This table here.
The previous project, you were a week behind. The one before that, you were 3 weeks behind. And the one that's due tomorrow, you can't tell me what the status is.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that one. Okay. Okay. All right. Can you guys give me one piece of feedback?
This
already
covered.
Yeah.
The one back there.
We didn't get to feedback.
Okay. The fact, the one fact? Okay. All right. This table. Give me fact.
And on Tuesday, it took you an hour to find the project, the high priority project that I asked you
for. Oh, the Jefferson project that you asked me about? Is that the one? Okay, yeah, okay. All right, give me one fact.
You forgot to abide by the terms of the contract that I sent you when you got back to me this past week.
Okay, I probably wanted to be a little bit more specific because there could be like 100 terms and I might not know which terms.
The deadline of the contract.
Okay, okay, great. Adam, do you got one for me in the back?
Yes. I'm really disappointed that you were late for our monthly meeting this morning. I was really counting on you.
You're too sensitive. I'm sorry that you're disappointed. Like, just stick with the fact. Okay, so great. So be careful about the emotions we put in, and that might be true for you, but I want you to just stick with the facts so I don't get defensive or start to come up with my little jive back. Now, you guys did a nice job. A lot of times groups will say, like, your desk is messy. Now, is that a fact or is that not a fact?
It's
relative. So, okay, that's an interpretation or a judgment. Because if you guys all came to my office, you'd probably all agree that my desk is messy, but I would get defensive if you said that, because there's some judgment in that word messy. And I would say, you want to know where anything is? Ask me for it and I'll find it for you in 10 seconds. I know where everything is and that's how I like to work. So if you say that to me, my ears are closing because I'm immediately thinking how I'm going to rebuttal, how I'm going to come back, how you lose credibility because you don't know me. And so I'm now not listening to your feedback. I'm in the rebuttal mode. But instead, if you said, Candace, I noticed that there's a stack of papers 1 foot high on your desk. I'm not going to get defensive because that is what it is. If you said, Candace, I cannot see an inch of the wood on your desk for all the papers that are on top of it. Yeah, you're right. Because does having a stack of paper 1 foot high mean that I'm disorganized? No. Just because I turned in one report late, does that mean I'm disorganized? And so by doing this, we realize, when we're doing this thought process, we realize, wow, maybe I need more facts to really confirm the story that I have in my head. Or maybe I need to realize that there's other stories I could tell. Maybe they're not disorganized. Maybe they need training. Maybe they're not disorganized. Maybe I didn't give them proper instructions. And so it helps you to think about, you might be part of the problem. There might be other stories to tell. So how can we start with the facts for many reasons? So it helps the other person to be more receptive, and they know exactly what we're talking about. I was teaching this a few months ago, and this woman raised her hand, and she said, I had a really awful employee. It was one of those employees, they call them sometimes in office places, passing the trash, where they just get passed around because nobody wants to deal with them. And she inherited this employee. And she said she was awful. And she said, I'm guilty. I didn't say anything for months. But finally, I got the courage. Finally, I got the courage up to finally talk to her. So I brought her in the office, and I told her, I said, you know what? You're really aggressive. You're hard to get along with. People have been complaining about your behavior. You need to shape up. You know, this is something that's been going on for months. And she said she patted herself on the back afterwards. You know, I finally gave her some feedback. A month went by, and nothing really changed. And she said the woman came into her office one day, and she just broke down in tears. And she said, was totally not expecting this. She said, what's wrong? And she said, I have not been able to sleep for a month since you gave me that feedback. She said, I don't know what you mean by the fact that I'm aggressive and that everyone's been talking around behind my back about this and for months. So I don't know what you meant, and I cannot sleep at night because I don't know how to improve. And so the woman shared that she thought she was doing this woman a service by finally stepping up and giving her feedback, when really she was kind of torturing this woman by not being specific. So next time you're giving feedback, how can you really check yourself and say, is this a fact or is this an interpretation of the fact? Now, they might be so, you might be so convinced in your head that they are disorganized, but what's the real fact? So think about those labels you put on people. Gosh, they're so irresponsible. What are your facts? Now, that person is so obnoxious or rude. They're a bully. What are your facts? They make you more powerful in the conversation. Okay, so start with facts. So this is another example of what would be a better way to start if you said, Dave, I've had it with you. Let's talk. Or if I said, what's your name, sir?
Oh, Nathan.
If I said, Nathan, you're a flake. Let's talk about it. Or if I said, what's your name, man?
Ellen.
Ellen, if I said, hi, Ellen, of the past 10 times you were to be at our team meeting, you were late 7 and didn't appear the other 3. Each time you've apologized and promised to be on time for the next meeting. Which one of those is a more effective way of starting?
The third.
The third one, why? There's facts. There's facts. So start with facts. All right, I've covered that summary. Now the next, one other thing I just want to note. Notice it says share your facts. It doesn't say share the facts. It's your facts. There's more facts out there. It's just the facts that you see from your own lens. So just note that teeny little word makes a big difference. All right, so the second step, tell your story. Now the story is, you know, all the meaning you have in your head and the way you're kind of interpreting it. Now if we've already determined that that can often be a judgment or an interpretation and that could be wrong or inflammatory or cause the other person to get defensive, why would we want to share it? Why would we have it in here? Why do you think we have it as part of the tool?
Well, it's how it impacts you.
Great. Yeah, it gives some context. Because sharing facts doesn't always paint the whole picture. You know, I might say, hey, I noticed you were late 3 times last week, and they might say, well, what's it to you? You know, maybe you could say, I noticed you were late 3 times last week, and I had to cover your calls when you weren't here, and I'd like to talk about the respect we have working together. So they understand why you're bringing it up. All right, so make sure you tell your story. And it says here, second one, do your homework. You don't want to say, hey, I noticed you were late last week, and I'm wondering if you're taking this project seriously. And then they say, well, I just found out my husband has cancer and I was in the hospital. So you don't want to put your foot in your mouth. Do your homework first. And when you say your story, watch for any defensiveness or any signs of silence or violence and how to make it safe. I know I haven't given you all those skills, but that's what they're talking about. It says look for safety problems. The third step. Okay, I want a drum roll on your tables for this one, because it's just one sentence. Okay, here's the one sentence. Here it is. How do you see it? And then you pause. And that's all you do. You ask a question. You can pick whatever question you like. Like, I'd like to hear your perspective. It's a question, it's a statement, but what do you think? Do you agree? Do you see it differently? Pick whatever question you like, but the key is you gotta pause afterwards. I had a crucial conversation about 2 weeks ago, and I went through the steps, and then I noticed maybe they were looking like they were getting a little mad, and so I didn't want to hear what they'd have to say, because I didn't want them to be mad, and so then I asked them the question, but then I kept talking, because I was afraid that they'd be mad, and so I went back and I stated more facts, which then got them even more mad, and so then I didn't pause. So you got to just pause and shut up and let them enter into the dialogue. Make sense?
Yes.
All right. Cool. Talk tentatively. That's not being timid. Tentative is different than timid. Let me give you an example. Here's some language that's not so tentative. The fact of the matter is, that's a dumb idea. The only reasonable option is, and my favorite, If I agreed with you, then we'd both be wrong. That's not tentative language. More tentative language would be things like, in my opinion, maybe it would make more sense to try this. I believe what we should do is. I'm wondering if that example applies to us. It's stating your story as a story instead of as a fact, for example. So if I said, you know, I'm beginning to wonder if you're taking this project seriously, rather than, you're not taking this project seriously. It's a very different way of stating something. So use tentative language. So I think we've got, we are running out of time. So I am going to jump right to the end here. Encourage testing. Encouraging testing is basically saying, here's all my conclusions. Here's everything I've seen. Do you agree? Did I see this wrong? What do you think? It's going into the conversation and inviting someone to disagree with you, which is hard, because we usually don't want someone to disagree with us. But that can be powerful when we invite someone to disagree. And that is encouraging testing. So let's take a look at all these skills put together, and then I'm going to give you a little cheat sheet for how to say it. All right, here we go. This is Melinda sitting down, and we've got Jackie approaching her. Have you ever been given a compliment, you're not really sure if it's really a compliment or not? Like someone says, oh, you got a haircut. It's interesting. And you're like, what is that? So this is one of those situations, and let's watch how Melinda starts with facts, and then she tells her story, and then she asks the question, and she encourages testing. And see if you can see all those steps and kind of check them off as you go. Let's take a look.
So there you are. Listen, I wanted to thank you for the terrific job you did on the design. It was a nice piece of work. Well, that's good to hear. It made real good use of color. Not like your last job. bland.
Yeah, well, the end user wanted a bright and sassy look. And it came in at such a reasonable rate.
For once, you guys didn't kill our budget.
Well, we got some help from an intern, and that saved a lot of money.
I just can't believe your team did such a good job. What are you trying to tell me? Well, frankly, I'm shocked that you showed such confidence.
Can we talk about something that's bothering me?
Sure.
You started the conversation by thanking our team for doing a good job. Then you suggested that our work is normally drab and expensive. You ended by saying you were surprised that we showed competence.
I know, Melinda. I mean, can't you take a joke?
I'm beginning to wonder if you really do think that we don't do a good job. You don't want to just come out and say it. Instead, you throw hints and pretend that it's a joke. Is that what's going on here?
Well, not exactly.
Oh, well, if you see it differently, I'd love to hear your view.
Well, sometimes I am disappointed. Mostly about how our expectations differ. I mean,
all right, so let me give you a cheat sheet so that you can sound just like Melinda, too. All right, here's some language to use for the S and the T and the A. So for state your facts, you can start out with, I've noticed that. Some language for the T. Tell the story. Is I interpret that as, or I'm beginning to think that, or I'm beginning to wonder if. Choose the one that would be most appropriate for your situation. These are just suggestions. You can use other language. This is just some suggestions. And for the A, how do you see it? Do you see it differently? This is very concise and it's quick. So let me give you an example. Let's take on an aging parent. So I might say, Mom, I've noticed that you've fallen 3 times this month, 1 time breaking your hip. I'm beginning to wonder if we should talk about alternative housing arrangements. What do you think? Boom, we're into dialogue. So it's not a long lecture model. I know sometimes we think that in order to show all the skills that we have, we've got to come up with this like 5-minute long thing and use a thesaurus and come up with all these great words. But it's boom, boom, boom. And this is just how you start the conversation. There's a lot more to the crucial conversation, but this will get you started. Any questions about that?
I have a question.
Yes.
At what point, the issue of the trust, the disrespect, and the third one, at what point does that come up?
Well, if you were think, if you wanted to bring up the conversation, you would make, how that helps is to think about your facts. So for example, I wanted to have a crucial conversation. I'm trying to think about how much time I've been saying this.
We can talk later.
Yeah, I'd love to talk more about it. But basically, it'll help you think about what you want to bring up. I once had a hard time with my boss, and I didn't think she valued me. And I wanted her to admit she was wrong and that I was right and how she was managing. I wanted to admit she was wrong and I was right. And so, and I wanted to also address sort of the content. Like, at a meeting, she did this and I didn't like it. And so that conversation was very much about, well, you did this at this meeting and then you did it again, and it's finger-pointing backwards. But when I realized, I really wanted to talk about our relationship and about respect, and I realized that that was really about how we work better together in the future, then that conversation, the facts are much different. I noticed, and it helps you to think about the few forward moving, if that helps at all. So you'd still bring up what happened, but you're talking about the future rather than the past. I'm adding things that I haven't taught yet, so I'm sorry. But
talk to you about it later.
Okay, great. Thanks. All right, any other questions about this? Great, so that's state to start. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is I want you to go back to the message that you wrote down. I want you to apply this to your own situation. So put this on in, pull out your script that you wrote, and come up with what's your fact or facts, what's your story, and what's that question you want to ask at the end. So you could actually go out and have a conversation tonight if you want.
I'm sorry, can I just with your first one, I noticed that how would you, like, because I'm thinking about the conversation, and I'm thinking, I would say, I noticed that you, X, Y, and Z, but then it, to me, it seems like the you is the blame part of it. So I can't remember how you said it just a moment ago to begin your conversation, I noticed.
Well, there's more than just the word, it's also how we set it up and how we say it. So there's a lot to making a mistake. But I think it's okay to say, I noticed that on Thursday, I asked you for the report, and you turned it in on Friday. So that's totally fine.
Okay.
But it's your tone and how you're communicating and what are your goals in the right place. So I want to talk briefly and keep writing your conversations, but I want to kind of conclude because I've been given the 3-minute warning here. How to get better. We've done a lot of research on transference. How do your skills transfer into your daily activities? A couple things we found. One is it's hard to do alone. If you just say, yeah, I'll go read the book, I'll get better, you're going to be a lot less successful than if you enlist a partner, enlist your spouse, say, hey, let's read this book together. Hey, can we get a book club going? We meet once a month to discuss one chapter a month. How can you stay in dialogue about these skills? The second thing we found is it takes 10 weeks of practice to get better. Who here drives a stick shift? Sir in the back, what's your name?
William,
the first time you drove stick shift, what was the ride like? What?
It wasn't pretty.
Okay, was it kind of jerky? Did you stall?
Many times.
Okay, so that's a lot like how we are when we first use these skills. We might kind of stall out, being like, oh, I forgot the skill. Oh my gosh, what's the second part of the acronym? And we might stall and it's a little jerky. But then how's the drive now?
Like butter.
So what we found is that after 10 weeks of practice, people really became masters of these skills. So it takes practice. And the other thing we found is that you have to be specific. If you just say, yeah, I'll read the book, yeah, I'll get better at everything, it's much less effective than, and then if instead you say, I really need to improve, I know I go into silence, I need to speak up better and more effectively, I really need to focus on that, particularly with my boss. You're going to be much more effective as you practice, as you move forward, because you have a purpose for your learning. There's a quote that kind of ties in with this and says, all my life I've wanted to be somebody. Now I see I should have been more specific. So how can we be really specific as we move forward? Now, I have some resources for you. Vital Smarts is really committed to you getting these skills and you really trying these skills out and having this improve your lives. And for them, it's in their best interest, because then you'll go out and tell somebody else that these skills really work and are great. So they've really invested in a lot of free resources for people. So if you look on your trifold cards, and there's a little piece at the end, it lists three resources that we have available that are free for you. And they are an assessment called the Style Under Stress Test, And it's a quick 33-question test you take online, and it tells you what is your style under stress. Do you tend to go into silence? Do you tend to go into violence? There are MP3 audio files where you can see some of these videos. You can hear some of the authors talk about their experiences with the book. Excuse me. And at the bottom it says video examples as well. We also have a newsletter, and what it is every week people submit questions to the authors, and they say things like, the questions are, how do you use crucial conversations with teenagers? How do you use crucial conversations with a bully? How do you have a crucial conversation over email or over the phone? How do you give someone feedback when you haven't observed the behavior? They're in an office building, in a different city, but you know that there's problems. So they have great questions, and they respond with a script for how would you respond in this situation. So it's helpful if you want to live vicariously through other people and their questions, or if you want to submit your own question. And they do a really nice job of responding. And there's no spam, it's not sold, or to your email address isn't sold, but it is something that you get once a week. And does anybody now subscribe to it? Is it useful?
Very.
Oh, the newsletter?
Yes.
Yeah.
You like it a lot? So at the bottom, if you are interested, you can have access to all of these resources, and including the newsletter. And if you pass this back into me, I have 2 free giveaways, and I will pull from these to give them away. I have a book, and I have some audio CDs. So if you would like to be entered into that raffle, I will do that. Any questions that you want to throw out before I kind of show my one final video, if I have permission to do that, but I can forego the final video. Any last questions? Yes.
Candace, very nice job. Thank you. Difficult conversations, crucial conversations,
fierce conversations.
Tell me.
Yes. Well, of course I like crucial conversations. They all have a different spin. I mean, a lot of the things are similar. They use different language in how. So, for example, one book might call it, how are you part of the problem? What's your role in the problem? And another book might call it, what's your contribution to the problem? So some of it's similar, just different semantics. I would say the difference in ours, at least for the training, is that what's really unique are the videos, so you get to actually see it, and you get to see, wow, they did this right, this is what it looks like when it's done wrong. There's also a lot of research behind this, where I know Difficult has some research as well, but I don't know that it's ongoing, and we have studies that are currently being done and come out all the time, so there's that behind it as well. I can tell you more afterwards. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to sell it too hard, but crucial conversations is really good.
Do you have time for the short video?
Yes, okay.
That's about it. And
right.
Then Frank, can we come?
Great, thanks. Okay, so one of the questions I get at the end is, what if I'm the only person in my office that's actually using these skills? Can it really make a difference? If I make it safe and disagree with my boss, am I really going to make a difference? Is it even worth trying? And one of the authors is famous for, he's always talking about the power of one person. One person can make a difference. If you just make it safe and you use the right skills, you really can make a difference. Finally, his son had enough, and he said, you don't understand middle school, Dad. He's like, if I try to have this conversation and make it safe and try to disagree, he's like, I'm just going to get punched. It's like, you don't get middle school. So his dad turned to him and he said, well, then prove it to me. Prove it to me for your next science fair project that one person can't make a difference if they can use these skills in a respectful way, particularly when it comes to disagreeing in a group. So let's take a look, and I'll leave you with that you indeed can make a difference as one person. Well, all right, I know another place where it lives, so let me put that here.
That desk's not messy enough.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to show you a different video then to close with. This is he did another science fair project, and this was on do little kids speak up? Do little kids speak up when they think something is distasteful? So this is another science fair project, and it just proves that sometimes kids are silent as well. So I'll leave you with this video instead. It's just as good.
We all know adults stink at talking about tough things, but how about little kids? Here's my experiment. Feed kids wretched brownies, then see if they'll tell you the truth, especially when they think it might hurt your feelings. First, I made the brownies. Lots of chocolate, eggs and flour, but instead of sugar, I put in salt. Oh. Lots of salt. Oh, ho, ho, ho. like these better. Now I recruit kids of various ages for a taste test. I tell them I want to compare ordinary brownies to my special brownies. My dear grandmother's special recipe. My dear dead grandmother's special recipe. Then I give them a dollar for being such a big help. My parents always taught me that if you want someone to like you, give them money. Okay, here goes. First aid to yummy sugar brownies. Next, they eat the salt bricks. Watch this girl. She can hardly keep from gagging. And now for the crucial moment. Will they tell me the truth and possibly offend me? I ask them to point to the brownies they like best. No surprise that some tried to spare my feelings. But watch, even the one who gagged, and how about Roro Kids? But do you want to know what they really thought? Here, guys, I have leftovers. Does anybody want seconds?
Two-day class. This is a train-the-trainer model. Mm-hmm. So we certify people to become trained in crucial conversations. We are teaching an open enrollment class in Philadelphia, and I'm actually in July. And this is a coupon for 20%. I've never seen them actually do coupons before. So, so if you know somebody who would like to take it, happening in July, and there's more information on the website. Let me pull for the raffle.
Okay, here I shuffle them.
Okay, so we have a Crucial Conversations book and an audio companion. All right. I'm just going to take a bunch here, and I am going to throw them, and whichever one goes the farthest. The two that go the farthest are going to be the ones that win. One's in the chair, and that is Katina Kolzas.
Katrina.
I'm sorry. Would you like the book or the audio companion? There you go.
Thank you.
And Mark Spool.
All right.
Who goes the farthest?
Thank you so much for the
time.
I wish you were great
audience. Thank you. Thank you very much, Taylor. We'll take care of it. And on behalf of the chapter and everybody here tonight, I'd like to present this to you, something to script your next crucial conversations.
Oh, neato. Thanks, guys.